This is Margaret Cho, and you're listening to The Bicast, podcasting for the bisexual community.
Welcome to The Bicast, a podcast for the bisexual community. Our special guest today is Patricia, the editor and publisher of Larker. Patricia is a lesbian-born New York-based photography and video artist, writer, and collaborator. She is the editor and publisher of Larker, a large-format zine with bisexual content as the focus. Patricia works as a freelance visual editor and is also the editor of Flare Arts Journal and the co-founder of Teamworks Unlimited, a queer arts collaborative in New York City. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction.
So, Patricia, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I want to actually begin by thanking you for spearheading this podcast project to keep bi people connected to each other. It has already been immensely amazing for me, so thank you. To answer your question, I'm just another artist here in New York with ambitions to teach both inside and outside of the traditional classroom setting. I'm just not quite there yet, but I was born in Lisbon and I immigrated here to the U.S. as a teenager. I moved around a little bit within the East Coast. And when I realized that I wanted to study art and communications, I eventually accepted my interest in photography and thought that it might be something I could do for a while. And that decision has basically determined where I have lived and worked. It's why I stayed in New York.
You're fantastic, and thank you for thanking me. We appreciate that so much. We really enjoy doing the podcast.
It's great work. You know, I didn't know about it until I was working on issue two, and I posted on Binet USA, like, hey, people, looking for writers, artists, etc. And you wrote, and you said, hey, there's this podcast. And I was like, how did I not know about this? And I looked, and I thought, oh, it hasn't been going on for that long. I only missed 30 episodes, you know.
I know. Put out quite a few episodes in a very short time.
It's great. It's great.
The Larker issue that I read, it is just so beautiful and so full of history.
Thank you.
What inspired you to produce that?
Well, so many things. And I can't say that it was, like, the first issue was 2013. I can't say that it was like, oh, I had this idea, I did it, and there it was. I had been, well, do you really want to hear the whole story?
Mm-hmm, I do.
Well, it came about, Larker as a publication came about in a very funny way, and issue two particularly was kind of this explosion of things. And by the way, you were among the first people to support it online. Thank you for that. The circumstances that led me to build a commitment structure around this project that I call Larker were many. And for a long time, as a visual art maker, working independently, like, I'm not with a gallery, I have never tried, it has never been my goal. I mean, not really been something I tried to do, but I had wanted to create something around a compilation of bisexual visual language, how we present visually, like, to ourselves, to each other, how we communicate with our bodies and actions, our personal style, our strategies for representation and aesthetics. And, of course, in the canon of LG-dominated academia, those nuances get lumped in with queer. And I wanted to see for myself, just kind of casually, not really ambitious, just where this kind of distillation would go if I just looked for it, you know? So I began collecting images from all periods of time and began looking at art differently, to just look for possibilities in the queer art that I was looking at, which is itself a very bisexual thing. You know, bisexuality, to me, being a rich prism of possibilities. Whoa. Nothing less. So I started to just collect images, right? And this was actually very enjoyable for me, to photo edit in a context that was more personal, but not about my own photographs. So there was that already in me, and I began doing that in the mid-2000s, just kind of collecting, you know, images of, I mean, I wouldn't publish them now, but, like, just collecting images. And as I collected these images, I saved them in my files, and I built up a body of research around that interest. And then I found myself in grad school to get an MFA because, well, unless you're famous, it's the only way to have access to teaching is to actually, you know, get an MFA like everybody else, which is good. So I took out some loans and applied to a program thinking I would get rejected, but somehow I got accepted, which was wonderful and still surprising to me because I was very nervous and kind of going through a tough time, but I barely remember that interview. But getting accepted to this program that I applied to meant that I was able to study with a queer artist whose work I had long been intrigued by and admiring, the work of Maylin Blake, whose writings on art and process really spoke to me. I knew that I wanted to learn with this person, and I applied to that program. I just went for it as a test run. I got into the school. Kind of bewildered me. But there I am, 37 years old, back in grad school, and surrounded by classmates who were mostly younger than me. One-third of the class was actually queer, which was super delightful, and half of the group was international, non-U.S.-born people, and the faculty was almost entirely queer, which was wonderful. And as far as I know, I was the only bisexual student in that class, in that group, and that was not something that I stood up and announced to my peers. Despite some of my images and work, a couple of works that I had been working on at the time had the word bi in the title as like a pun, a play. But I just did my usual thing, which is by default, pass. And much more consciously, it's kind of an act of I dare you in this very sissy way. That's kind of how I go about my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't say anything about who or how I was fucking. So when people asked me privately, I said that I was bisexual and currently with someone of opposite gender, which was unusual for me, meaning that I had not been with that many people of opposite gender.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the context I'm finding myself in. And eventually I was welcomed as queer because of my obvious feminist politics and lesbian reference points, but I did have to manage my emotions accordingly, as we all have during certain conversations, because even though these were classmates, I grew to cherish and respect smart, well-intentioned queer artists. There were things that were said to me that made me think about things in a different way, and some were particularly hurtful, but I sort of just thought, I kind of stood back and thought about it a little bit. I didn't let it get to me because I was in school, I was working, I wanted to do my work, I was managing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to admit that there was an element of surprise there that I thought about. And by surprise, it's not that I was shocked that biphobia existed, but I was surprised that this aversion to bisexuality was still such an investment for younger queer people. That was my first contact with that. And I thought, my gosh, I thought we were over this. And that sent me back in time. That sent me back in time to when I moved to New York in the 90s to study art. And I was, for the first time, kind of away from family. I was in New York. Nobody knew me. I was so happy. I could just work. And after work, I could go out and meet girls and just go to punk shows and do all these things I had been wanting to do. And the 90s here were really active, very active. I moved here in 94, so just to be specific. Mm-hmm. So I only know, like, the second half. But I thought nothing of... I mean, also, I'm probably only speaking English fluently for about 5 years before this, so I'm still saying semi-embarrassing things like, oh, I like topless cars, when I meant convertible.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, funny things. I was still saying things like that. But I thought we were all supposed to be out, right? I thought that was a big political act of the era.
Right.
I thought, oh, of course, great, you know. So I would go out to just parties and clubs, and I would identify as bisexual, and that got me so much animosity. And
mm-hmm.
It took me about 2 years until I just learned to shut up and just say, I like who I like, you know, and leave it at that, you know. And
that, you know, that's so common with all of us. We just get so tired of trying to, you know, we just get tired of trying to explain ourselves and putting up with it. And it's just like, okay, you know, so very common. And I think a lot of us recover eventually, right?
Of course, absolutely. We have to. And, but I was in this moment where I thought, okay, I'm in grad school, I'm 37, and I'm meeting like much younger people who still have these ideas, like, what is going on here? And I just, because I'm involved in more than one world, you know, this was sort of like, wow, like, this is kind of amazing right now. Because I thought the bisexual thing was slowly getting more and more accepted, and like, it's not a problem with anybody that I hang out with on a regular mm-hmm. basis, you know. So this was the first time that I was kind of meeting a new flock and kind of understanding where this disconnect was. And it was just a moment in time, I guess. And I thought, okay, so I'm kind of seeing how my identifying as bisexual just gets a lot of jokes made. And, like, the first 20 times they're funny, but then I'm like, wait, hold on a minute. Really? You know? So, and I'm someone who's actually I'm very serious. I can't help that. But I'm also kind of just irrepressibly goofy, and I like that kind of goofy camaraderie, you know? So I didn't think much about it for a while, and then I started kind of reading a little deeper and kind of seeing patterns, and I felt like, wow, okay, this is the way it is. Okay, I just observed. And I actually thought about, you know, my role in all this is really to support a greater group dynamic, and I focused on that. That's just what I did. So that's one kind of part of the story, and I'm sorry that I'm kind of dragging on and on. But then what happened was my teacher, Nayland Blake, who I already mentioned because I wanted to study with him, had a show at the International Center of Photography for the triennial there. I believe it was called A Different Type of Order. No, the show was called A Different Kind of Order. I don't remember the title of his installation, but it was a site-specific performance about Times Square, about the streets of Times Square as being sites of performance. And as part of this, Nayland had asked the class, like my peers and our class, to make zines in response to this idea. So I thought, this is fantastic, this is my excuse, I have all these images that I've been collecting, I'm going to make a bisexuals in Times Square zine, right? Wonderful. Which, as you might expect, is extremely niche. It's kind of, you know, it's far more undocumented. It was like, okay, I'm not bad at research, but this is just taking a little way too long, you know? So mm-hmm. I focused the zine more to be geared toward what his installation was about, and just snuck in a few bisexual pictures in there, and that was issue number one. So issue number two then was kind of bluntly about bisexuality, because I had all this content, and I thought, okay, this is the time, this is it, this is now. And I think because as I researched deeper about statistics, I was like, oh my goodness, like how, of course I knew this, but when you are presented with numbers, it's so much more alarming. When you're mm-hmm. presented with actual numbers and you read the reports, and it's like, oh, okay, my gosh. And so the combination of all of these things, of going through 2 years talking about art in a queer way, but by queer meaning LG, right? And even though I just had to do it.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It was kind of why I started the podcast. It was like, we need to be out there. We need to be visible. We need to be talking. We need to have representation. And we need to tell people that we have a culture, because I hear that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We have no culture, and we have a very rich culture. So I am so grateful for you to put this together.
Oh, thank you. But I think the struggle, too, or at least for me, is that I don't dislike these people I'm around, that I'm meeting for the first time, who come from different parts of the country or the world. It's like, I have a lot of love, but how do you change the conversation around? And I think that maybe because of my goofiness, I wasn't taken very seriously about it. But there's a part of me that feels like, well, it doesn't matter how. It should just be taken seriously, period, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
And please, now I'm sounding like I was a clown. I was not a clown, but I just have this odd sense of humor that sometimes it is what it is, and it can dislodge expectations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how that came about. And I wanted the zine to focus. So, okay, there's something that I probably should say that I think is more to the nature of your question. Because for me, in my world, or at least in my own experience or perception, bisexuality has required a very different decodification of how we relate. It's different from how gays and lesbians read each other, which, of course, becomes the dominant queer language. I think the way that bisexuals identify each other is often by what we don't do within a larger queer vocabulary. It's this other thing where, by the way, my experience meeting other bisexual people is overwhelmingly positive, and by that I mean like 99.9.9%. So I have always felt like, from my experiences, the way that I can spot another bisexual person is usually through conversation, and it's by what they don't say, what they don't do, what they don't assume. To me, that is the highest indicator that I'm talking to someone who is a non-monosexual, is they are not making assumptions about X, Y, or Z. Do you want to say something?
Well, no, I was just going to say, I never put my finger on it, but I think that's absolutely true. At least for me, too, it's like I make connections with people all the time, and it is what they don't say, and that they don't make assumptions. It's really interesting.
I think it is. And for me, that's how I've always felt about it. And I think that I hesitate from using the word, it makes me sound awfully general about it, but that has been how I've been able to, and I don't go out and say, are you bisexual, or I am. Ooh. I mean, it depends, of course, but it's not how I lead my conversations, and it's not that, for me, it's because people have to gain my trust a little bit more, and because I've had just much more harsher experiences around my sexuality, I feel like, well, you have to earn my trust first, and then I will tell you about me. And that's kind of how I go, and how bisexuality has required a different codification that is based on a different way of identifying each other, right? I think that that was actually what I wanted the zine to focus on, like that form of visual literacy, even if it's extremely difficult to pinpoint. That's what I wanted to recreate. And for issue two, I had just been exhausted by some setbacks that I think made me make a very blunt issue, more blunt than I would do again. But I think I might go back to the idea of using invisibility as a tool for future issues of Larker, to really kind of collect what does invisibility look like, really, which to me is very funny. But hopefully it will present funny as in, really, we're invisible because here we are in front of your eyes. But hopefully it will present a selection of micro-literacies that might be interesting to examine by what we are not doing, by what we are not exposing, by what we are not subjecting ourselves to.
I can't wait for that. That'll be great. It really will.
I hope it will be.
It will be. Judging by your work, it will be. How did you decide who to include or exclude and which parts of history to highlight?
Can I say something else to the other question?
Oh, yes, please.
I just want to add that when I say that I want to make a project about what invisibility looks like, I don't mean that as a political method, right? I think it's
right.
I don't mean that in an organizing strategy. I don't mean it that way. I mean as a visual discourse, like how, as a mode of presenting the richness of bisexual visual language. And for what I'm planning for issue three so far, I'm really far from done, but it's less blunt, it's more visual, less verbal, more like issue one, but the content closer to issue two, and it's more about emotional and personal gesture and pleasure, less about statement, or perhaps more, depending on how it's experienced. I really just wanted to amplify a lot with issue two by visual juxtaposition. And that's really the history of this little project.
I think you are showing the world what we really are.
Oh.
And I think that's great.
Oh, thank you.
So let's go back to the question I asked before you said that.
Mm-hmm.
How did you decide who to include or exclude and which parts of history to highlight?
You know, I look at it as just very directly gathering intel. You know, I'm very X-Files about it, very Dr. Scully about my selections. it's impossible to cover every single topic. I don't burden myself with that. I've been focusing on like visual representation and or responses to issues that we are still grappling with today. For example, it's amazing to me, sad and amazing to me, that even with the 1990 manifesto explicitly asserting that we should question the existence of only two genders. I say 1990 because this is recent history, right? Of course, mm-hmm. we can pinpoint that further back, you know, somehow, like to the 80s, to even to the 30s, I think. But mm-hmm. so even with the 1990 manifesto explicitly saying that everybody should question the existence of only two genders, that bisexuals still have to fight the idea that bi equals transphobia. So does that make sense?
It made perfect okay. sense, and I so agree with you. It just amazes me that it still happens.
Yeah, so those little fragments of history to counteract these misperceptions are really key points that I look for. Also, it keeps me learning, of course. I don't know everything. I only know my experience of events. There was a photograph of Brenda Howard, actually, that I found for issue 2. That was just a fantastic stride. A fantastic moment in stride where Brenda was in a gay parade in Queens, and I live in Western Queens. I have really enjoyed living here, and I thought, oh, I have to include this. It looks fantastic. I found it. I got permission to use it, but it was just so small, and she would have been a blur. And I never met Brenda, but still, I can't represent Brenda as a blur, you know. So I can't have it all, but I work with what's available, and I make selections based on what goes with what, and is this a timely thing to make right now? Is this a point that needs attention, or can this image wait until the next issue?
So there were quite a few influential people, a lot of my favorite people, who contributed to issue 2. How did you manage that?
Persistence.
Yes.
But actually, Random Lights, issue 2, has a double page feature on bisexual history from the personal archives of Robin Oakes. And this is something that I hope to do with every issue, to have a collection of historical facts from the personal collections of people who have stuff, you know, mm-hmm. and hopefully people who are interested in sharing some of their unique traces of our history can contact me, you know, if you're hearing this, be they stickers, t-shirts, images, pictures. I'm definitely looking for interesting, like, bits of those fragments to share with more people. But with Robin, I emailed her. I had an idea. I thought, oh, I would love to do this. And then I just took a chance, emailed her, and she called me back. And we spoke. I outlined my goals. She agreed. I jumped on the sofa a few times. Days pass. And then, much to my surprise, Robin did exactly as she said she would. And it was awesome because, you know, some people say, oh, yeah, uh-huh, but they never follow through.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not Robin.
she's wonderful.
Yes, and I'm definitely one of those people where if I'm in it, I'm in it. I follow through, so I really appreciated that from her, and just so generous and so fantastic. I have not met her in person, sadly. I missed seeing her in New York because the opening for the Bisexual Man of Color book was on the same date and time as the Million Man March in New York, so I didn't get to meet her. But I hope to have the chance to say thanks in person. That would really please me.
And you were part of that walk, right? That
March? Yes. I mean, along with many, 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 many people, yes.
Yes. Well, hopefully you'll get to meet her soon. This is going to be interesting because I think we already talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
But what would you say the goal was?
The goal of issue 2?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was really to create a sequence of bisexual historical facts from the accepted practice of pederasty as a form of bisexuality, if not, I forget the author's name, but if not an institutionalized form of bisexuality in a way, but from that to Julius Serrano's always engaging calls to action. I get a lot of inspiration from Julius Serrano. And to clubs named after a bisexual superstar who had just recently come out, Blondie, you know.
Ooh.
All of these kind of, not just semiotic things, but his, like, all of the stuff in this blender of chance, you know. And the idea of bisexual gardening was super fun with Vita and Harold. I mean, the idea that this bisexual couple had this gardening project, the fact that I can say, hey, something called bisexual gardening exists, is a fun thing. Because it's a fun thing, but also I think that we need something to smile at from time to time, right? And I think this is a good thing to smile at. And then, of course, the goal was to just, I would say that Well, let's just say this. So for my files, I brought in images of, like, Julie D'Aubigny, Genesis, as, like, this force of non-monosexuality, Marie Laurencin, Leslie Cheung. All these visuals challenge not just what queer people look like, but the complexity of bisexual visibility. And the goal was really about what visibility does look like, right? What is this mm-hmm. culture's visual heritage? I would say that's what it was. What is our culture's visual heritage? And Robin's collection of buttons perfectly reflects this. One of them reads something like, surfing the Kinsey scale.
I know, I've seen that one, it's wonderful.
Which is a great way of expressing how wonderfully difficult it is to pin us down, to find beauty in that, and to try and study the inevitable bi-code of that is a wonderful thing to me. And I think it does require a very different set of awarenesses for recognition. For example, like, this is a good example, if I go to a, it's like a punk show wearing a punk shirt. Everyone's going to look at me and say, oh, she's wearing a Fugazi shirt. She likes Fugazi. I'm going to ask her about Minor Threat, you know, early. So, but if I show up dressed the way that I most often do, people might assume I'm someone's girlfriend or I'm the band manager. You know, by the way, mm-hmm. those are actually things, assumptions people have made about me. But as much as I'm someone who delights in that very practical marvel of recognition, like, oh, they are part of that tribe, I can connect with them on this or on that level, that moment is the quick read, the Insta look. And my goal for Larker was really to establish a long form type of visual reading. But of course, logistically, you know, it can't be a scroll at this time. That would be very expensive.
Yes.
But that was sort of the idea, to just elongate that, to just not have, to have a sequence after sequence after sequence, but to keep it going and really elongate it a little bit.
Awesome. That's really awesome.
Thank you.
Did you encounter any rejections or any difficulties?
Rejections, no. I could have handled that. Well, rejections, no, but difficulty, yes. So I also really wanted to focus on living artists. I was thrilled that the cover artist, Danny K.O. Flux, was willing to participate. And he's somebody I don't know, right? I just saw this image, I saw his blog, and I said, hey, here's what I'm doing. If you identify this way and you're okay with this, I'd love to put you on the cover. And Danny said yes. And aside from that, and from Harry Farrow, who contributed a story. There are quotes from people, of course, who are alive, very much alive. Mm-hmm. And also from James L. Sword Jr., who's a brilliant artist, and of course Faith. And yeah, okay, so I'm thinking now that there's a lot of. I really wanted to focus on living people, right? So I started asking people who I knew, sort of, you know, like, sort of friends of friends, who I knew are bisexual in practice, but they didn't want to be included. And I wasn't offended, but I thought, okay, so that's still a bad word in queer art circles, huh? You know? And so that was one difficulty that I encountered. And I think, of course, as you might agree or not, but because people don't understand that term and nobody wants to be the pariah in their circle.
Exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
People see bi and they think binary and they don't want to do the work of questioning what that means to a specific culture. One of my big annoyances is when people say the word vagina. You know, and it's not that I am anti-woman. I am certainly not any type of woman, whether they have a vagina or not. It's
right.
It's just that I would rather hear the word cunt over and over, not as a pejorative, but just as a word, because vagina is Latin. You know, it's Latin. It's not the sterile, medical, neutral term we think it is. It's Latin for a sheath that covers a male sword. These people who walk around yelling, vagina power, but are really bigoted towards bisexuals, they make me pause.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, sorry, you are just not being demanding enough of the language you're using, and I just don't know what to do with you.
I think, you know, I've noticed that people, you're right, and I don't want to say it's human nature, but I think it might be the way we're taught. We just, we accept things at face value way too much.
Yeah.
You know, and we accept what people say way too much.
Mm-hmm.
We don't question enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly don't. I mean, I have my own moments where I do, you know, I'm sure Like, I know I can question more, too, but because this is my little annoyance, I think more about it, I guess. But that was another goal of Larker, you know, to show that bisexuals have been defying the binary since at least antiquity, and that whatever this style is that we can't or won't be pinned down by, there's the visual language, and here it is.
Very good, yes, and you did a great job of showing that. Being that you're an artist, do you make art from a bisexual point of view?
I think on one hand, I think it's unavoidable, right? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I don't think I make art about only one thing. I use only one type of experience or only one type of connection. I definitely use my own biography a lot and my own experiences. And also, I've always been someone with a strong relationship to my own sense of hope, and that influences many aspects of how I do my work and what I expect from it. My sense of hope keeps me really foolish, but I like it, you know. Bisexuality defines the nature of my desire towards others and to what I accept in myself as desirable, both to myself and to others. So in accepting that own awkward femininity, my own sort of failed boyishness, and my type of office drag that is very no-nonsense and has had people say, yes, sir, to me, despite my wearing lipstick and heels in a, you know, in a suit, of course. Like all of these experiences, you know, there's in everything I just described to you, there's a bisexual point of view, but then there's sexism, there's some kind of economic situation. So although I don't make work about bisexuality directly, I do have a conscious references here and there, and I examine and extract from my own experiences with bisexuality more as a framework to try to understand other aspects of my life, such as the way that I am read as a female, the way that I am read as an immigrant, the way that certain social circumstances bring a lot of fragility in me or with me or around me. And that's that. In the collaborative that I co-founded with my friend Laura, we co-founded an arts collaborative together called Teamworks Unlimited. And our dialogue is anchored in feminist ideals of the kind of productive futures we want to experience. But we can't say we are a lesbian collaborative because I am not one. So this affects which spaces will be accepting to us because, wow, big surprise, lesbian spaces can be antagonistically separatist, you know? So we have described ourselves as a mixed orientation queer feminist collaborative, which I'm sure leaves people thinking that I'm the straight one, because Laura just can't pass for straight, at least not in the eyes of others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I first met her, I thought, well, you never know. You know, I've met plenty of straight girls with punk haircuts, but the world does read her as queer immediately, if not directly as male, you know, or androgynous. But
right.
But as women, as two women whose sexual identities do not mirror each other, we can't work without acknowledging how the practice of female exclusion and inclusion in queer spaces affects bisexual women differently, and trans women also, and any woman who does not meet whatever the standard is in place, actually. But bisexuality does play a theoretical role in the collaborative art making, just like her own lesbian practices are a significant contribution. And I like working this way because it's more interesting to me. It's not 1-1 ratio of working. It's not a lateral thing. It's not a mirror. It's like a mound of mica kind of glaring over time, you know, from moonlight to sunlight to fog. You know, it's that.
Exactly. Very good. I mean, because we are so multifaceted, we cannot... I think everything just interconnects, and it's...
Another thing
Oh, sure.
That I just thought about, actually.
Mm-hmm.
People make, like, women make art. One of the things that has been very self-conscious in art making, or at least in New York for the past 5 years or so, is a very conscious awareness of the role that desire plays in queer art making. And maybe this is more indirect response to your question. I'm not sure if you feel this way, but I've been very aware for a while that my attraction to the male body, although much more rare than my attraction to women, is actually very different than what people term the gay male gaze or the straight woman's gaze toward the male body, right? And with women, I know that my attraction is definitely not based on models of sameness. and I'm not sure if I'm, I hope I'm expressing myself clearly. There's this stunningly amazing artist who I look up to, a lesbian filmmaker, pioneer named Barbara Hammer. In her book, and also in some of her lectures and talks, she has often talked beautifully about, I'm not sure if it's her word or my word, but something like a charge that she feels when she is lying next to her lover, a female lover, and how that amplifies every fiber of her being. Her whole sense of self just is radiating with strength and power and all of that wonderful stuff. And she describes this beautifully. And I have felt that with women intensely in my own way, but I don't ground it in the sensibility of sameness in the way that I believe it is for her from what I understand. And I very much enjoy listening about this from her. But to me, it has to do with how desire has to do, is based on how people carry their thoughts in their bodies. That's interesting to me. It's the potential, not so much the aspect of sameness, physical or emotional, that generates desire. And it's a distinction I want to learn more from, because that perspective keeps me questioning not just the straight art history discourse, but also the LG-dominated queer art history discourses, because, you know, non-monosexual desire isn't represented with nuance in contemporary art so much. Works that are really interesting tend to get labeled queer, which is fantastic. But I have these, I'm not sure if I just spend too much time thinking about this and I just sound like I'm nutty, but there's a lot of LG themes made by LG artists working today, most of whom are awesome and I happily support with love and joy. But not only, it's not always a reflection of my own desire, but more importantly, queer art is inherently framed within politics of social acceptance, right? And bisexual people have had a very particular struggle for acceptance within the queer community. So I think this affects how artists make work, and it certainly has affected my work somehow, because those politics are kind of grounded.
So that kind of is an interesting point that I was wondering. Do you see yourself as an artist or an activist or both?
Well, I'm certainly not I don't call myself an activist. I mean, certainly not compared to people like you and Faith and everyone else who has been on the show. I do hope, of course, one hopes that one's work is illuminating in some way and that my art practice as a tool, you know, can generate opportunities for activism. But I don't think I'm there yet. I don't think that my work is that developed for that purpose right now. Although the work I do with Teamworks Unlimited, that with the collaborative, that's more activist-based, and that activist side of me is fulfilled by those projects and that kind of thinking.
Do you mind if I just mention something here?
Yeah, because of course.
I hear a lot of people, you know, just regular people, mm-hmm. say, well, I'm not an activist like you, or I'm not an activist. But then they share things, and they participate, and, you know, they call people out in their daily lives on their biphobia. To me, that makes you an activist because you're being active. And I think the sheer act of being out and bisexual, mm-hmm. is in itself activism. Mm. So I know for the first 6 months, people kept calling me activist. I go, no, I'm a 57-year-old grandmother. You know, and so somebody explained to me, it's like, no, because you are participating and active in the community and making change. You're an activist. So I went, okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, well, you know. You've earned it. You've earned it. Maybe I just feel a little too isolated, and I have, like, kind of more than one world in a way, in the sense that, for example, I make work about where do I actually isolate my freedom as a citizen.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I consider you an activist.
Oh.
Well, because you are representing and promoting the nuances and the lives of bisexuals, absolutely. And that's important.
Absolutely. Yeah. If I could only get my Twitter account for Larker to be unlocked, then I would be a real Twitter activist. Woo! Oh, it takes some forever.
I know. I enjoy Twitter much more than Tumblr.
Oh, so. Yeah. I don't do Tumblr anymore. It's just too overwhelming.
Mm, and it is. It has great things on it for the bisexual community. And then they either have the not so great stuff. So it's difficult.
Yeah, and sometimes I just don't have the time or the patience, and patience is not my strength. I'm not a very patient person, and I know this, but I don't have the patience to sort of comb through all of it or to be dismissive of the hurtful things, you know. I just don't go. And
yeah.
But
fortunately, every once in a while we do run across a really great article and we do share those.
Yeah.
But I have a manager. I stay away from it, so.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Volunteer. I couldn't pay her. All right. So let's talk about your new work.
My new work. Well, I'm working on a project now. One of the several video editing projects I have going now is a work. It's actually something that I call my bisexual video. It is not a video of me. It is not anything that will be remotely confused with, pornography or anything. It's going to be more abstract, I think. But it's a video that is also based on bisexual language, and I don't know what else to say because it's difficult to talk about something I haven't finished and I'm kind of in the thick of it and undecided about certain decisions. But I'm working on this video with bisexual forms in mind, and certainly a narrative form that takes that quality we can't pin down, you know, kind of surfing all the scales, not just a Kinsey.
Right.
Well, I'm thinking about that, you know. But being that I don't surf, I'm tragically out of metaphors right now. Forgive me. But that's what the visual language is about for that video. It's not going to be long. It's going to maybe be 7 minutes at most. That's what I'm doing. I'm kind of going through my files and figuring out. Well, all right. I could use this with motion or just thinking about it in terms of motion and gesture.
Well, it's going to be awesome because I think, this is just another thought I have, I think the part of being bisexual that is hardest to explain can't be put into words and maybe does need to be explained in a visual form because it's just that one thing that I just can't really get across to people that I don't have any language for it.
Well, it makes me think about we live in such a world, like, I think our world now is just flooded with stimulation, visual stimulation, audio, increasingly audio stimulation, visual, verbal, audio, and our capacity, I think, I'm not an expert on this, but I'm just saying that our capacity to trust the unknown, our capacity to be comfortable with something unknowable is decreasing, and I think this is very dangerous because I wake up every day and I feel like, oh my God, what I don't know is getting bigger and bigger by the day. Whoa. You know, I feel like I have no choice but to be more ignorant every day because things are evolving at more rapid speeds, and that is okay. That's the way it's going. But I don't understand what you're I understand what you are saying. I agree with you, but I don't understand those people you are referring to or that thought process that. Like people's hesitations, right? Mm-hmm. To accept this thing we can't pin down. We can't pin it down, so we can't trust it, or it must not exist.
Exactly. No, and I always say, you know, the older I get, the less I know, and that's okay. I'm happy about it.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, I've managed to, over time, break down. I was very much in a box. And over time, I've managed to actually break down all the stereotypes, not all, mm-hmm. of course not, it's always a working process, mm-hmm. break down all the stereotypes I had been taught, the safety, I think it might be safety because if I know the answer already, I don't have to think about it, even if that answer is wrong.
Right. I mean, there are times when I think we need that, right? Maybe but not when it comes to emotional spaces.
And when it hurts other people.
Right. Oh, of course. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Meaning, like, the same thought process that it takes to turn on or off a light switch might not be the best model to approach someone's interiority.
Exactly. You know? Oh, very well said. That's very well said. That's it. Mm-hmm.
But I hesitate, also. I have a lot of reservations about... I have my own reservations about working on Larker and working on this video because I don't want to fall into my own trap. Like, I don't want to... Okay, now I'm making my own judgments about what bisexuality is. Like, I would like to include things that I myself am not able to anticipate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is why reaching out to other people has been people like Robin, you know, just saying, hey, what do you have? I want to do this. And that has been one way to try to avoid that trap of just doing what I know, or just, because I think it's kind of dangerous to get on a one-track way of thinking and staying there. I don't know why that scares me so much, but it does.
So I was going to just wrap up, but I did want to talk about a little bit about culture and people of color and the feminist part, because they are so very much intertwined in our bisexual community. We have a very large population of Black and people of color and different cultures and different countries, and I don't think they get enough time. And I think people have the illusion we are all 21-year-old blonde-haired girls.
Oh.
You know, I or, you know, I don't know, with a lot of money.
Right.
I'm not sure. And I think that we need more representation on that. And I want to, I guess I don't really have a question, but I do want to thank you for kind of being out there on that.
Well, you're welcome. I think that, well, thank you, but you know I'm not, see, this is what I don't understand. I'm not, I never know how to talk about this because people read my surname and they think I am Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I was born in Lisbon, in Portugal, which is it is in Europe very much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not Europe as we know it in the sense. Like,
right.
Like Europe is like France, Germany, UK. It's North Europe. It's not so much South Europe, right? So, are you thanking me for including people like Sapphire in?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I understand. Okay.
Yes.
And actually, I wanted to include more. And I also hesitated from including people. So, for example, okay, Malcolm X. Here's a perfect example, right? Someone who there are records or people have come out and said, you know, Malcolm X had bisexual practices, you know. But I hesitated about using that imagery because, well, gosh, what do I do in that moment? Like, I don't want, you know, that person can speak for themselves.
Right.
They weren't, they did not identify that way for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So why should I, you know?
Right. And I agree with you. And I see it a lot in the LG community, appropriation of sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, as a bisexual person, really avoid doing that just because they may have, in their historic documents, practiced, you know, been with more than one gender.
Mm-hmm.
If they did not say that, it's really not up to me to decide that for them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I still have some images of Malcolm X in my files. I just would not, like, for example, I used a photograph instead of an out rapper, a young out bi rapper who I can't even find anything on him. Like a year later, I tried to actually contact him and give him an issue, and I couldn't find anything on him again.
Oh, wow.
His interviews remain, like he still has interviews and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am curious about too, people actually, not that many people know that Kathy Yacker was a bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually really, you know what, I might come back on the show. I might volunteer myself to come back because there's this really well-known author in New York named Chris Krauss. And she is a very good writer, a very astute thinker. She is the director of a publications center here in New York, and semiotext. And she's writing, I think, a biography on Kathy Yacker. And I when I moved here, within a year, I saw Kathy Yacker speak at a church, and I was blown away. And I had really liked her writing before that time. I felt like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm in the room. But I really want to see how Kathy Yacker's sexuality is presented and how this untamable spirit is presented and how that's going to go.
Yeah, I had no idea she was bisexual. Did she come out as bisexual, or?
I don't think she ever did come out, but she spoke about it. She identified. There are interviews where that has been said more than once. I'll have to look back. I'm sure I have them. But, meaning I have a copy of it somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, please come back. You can volunteer yourself anytime. Anytime you want to come back and talk, you're more than welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, this has been very enjoyable. And again, I want to thank you very much for doing the work you're doing, and it's so beautiful.
Thanks, Lynette.
All the links will be provided on the website. And is there anything else you'd like to add right now?
I would like to add that if you are hearing this and you are a bisexual artist of any sort, visual, verbal, audio, let me know. Drop me a line. Go to the website and let me know about your work. I will consider, everything will be considered. I will definitely look at everything and will be happy to support your work.
So listen up, everybody, because I know there's some of you out there. Yeah, she does great things, and hit her up.
Thanks.
All right, I just want to remind you all that you are not wrong, you are not broken, and you are not alone. You are a human being, and you are bisexual. Bye.
Bye.
The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew.